This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradud.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. What is up, everybody? On this episode of The Gauge, we have got the great and powerful Tim O'Connell, the bareback riding sensation, three-time world champion, three-time average champion. Yeah, those are three consecutive years all together. And you would have to really present me with a great argument to tell me that he is not probably the best bareback rider who's ever lived, and he is just getting into his prime. We've also got his traveling partner, Jesse Pope, who is a young up-and-comer who I'm sure we're going to see a lot of great things out of. This was a ton of fun, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. Check it out.
What it is. It looks like you just got your fresh cut. Did you get rid of your COVID hair?
I did, yesterday.
So did I. Me too. Like 8 weeks without haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine got buzzed off. My girlfriend tried to give me a haircut, so.
Tried to give him a fade.
Tried to?
Yes, that's why I wear a ball cap.
You got to show me.
Well, now he's just.
Is it growing out now?
Yeah, it's growing out, but I don't really like the look of it. I had a comb over that was better than his. I just didn't take care of it like he does. He's like a woman.
He likes to copy me in pretty much everything.
I've been rocking
well,
a comb
okay.
over since high school.
So you're a three-time world champion, and he just started his permit last year. You really think he's not going to try to copy you?
He just takes my hand-me-downs pretty much. Truck?
I mean, he's a lot bigger guy than you, so those pants probably don't fit him so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not. You're getting up to where you're pretty tall for a bareback rider.
Yeah, that's what they say anyways. I don't know.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had Kai Hamilton in here, and he's like 6'1".
I've like lived with Kai on and off for like 6 weeks.
Have you?
Yeah, because he stays up at Lambert's Ranch, and that's where like I went to get rehab done and everything like that. So I met Kai last year, and then
He's a cool kid.
Yeah,
he's a good kid. Yeah, he's gonna be big time.
He's legit, man. Like he was like he would sit and like he never really watched TV. So every time like Cody's got like a basketball court in his barn, so I'd just go outside and Kai'd be sitting out there standing on a basketball just. Practicing bull moves, like it's all he do, like 3-4 hours a day, just standing on a basketball.
Oh, he's a super interesting kid, kid guy. But I mean, yeah, he's like 6'1", but he's got to weigh 114 pounds.
Oh, he's tiny.
That might be why he's so good at bull riding.
Man, Cody told him. So we were working out at Fit and Wise, and Cody's like, "You should work out with Tim." And he didn't, He didn't like. He didn't like that too much.
No, I don't know if you watched the episode with him, but it was like, "So what have you been doing?" And he's like, "Nothing."
Yeah.
I don't. I'm not doing nothing. But that's one thing that from what it looks like with you, Tim, is that fitness is a big thing for you. And of course, if you came up through collegiate wrestling, it's like bred in you to you just have to always work out
for the most part.
Yeah,
I worked out like I didn't work out, and then for a while, like after I didn't for some reason I left high school wrestling, and then thought like I don't have to work out if I'm in rodeo,
right?
And then I got by with it for a while, and then. I went to my first NFR and got train wrecked there. Like for 2 years, they talked about like how I left a dent in the Thomas and Mack power play. And then after that, my wife told me, she's like, you should probably get a trainer.
Yeah. So is that what you did? You actually went and got a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm. And then the 2015, my second year at the NFR, I got like I was within it, working out with this one guy for a year. And he was kind of showing me like the CrossFit way of working out. And it was working. And then he graduated college or whatever, like his deal was it kind of was like a godsend. Like he came in and he had to personally train 5 kids. So like I sent him the deal and I was like, hey, this is what I want to do. Like this is, and then I started showing him some videos. Like I want to put on some weight,
you know?
Like I need to be better about riding these horses, blah, blah, blah. So he starts watching it, starts learning about it. And then he starts, putting good workouts together. And then the year ended, he didn't have to, but like we just kept on working out with each other up until like he left the town. And then he goes, man, I'm leaving, but I'm going to stick you with somebody else. Who he put me in with the guy I work out with now, which he's the assistant wrestling coach at Missouri Valley College.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So me and him have worked out solidly for the last 4 years, 5 days a week. And he sucks to work out with.
He just kills you?
Pretty much.
He can smell the alcohol on you if you went out and partied the night before.
So you've been working out with him too?
No. Jess lasted about a week and a half.
Three weeks.
Jess wasn't about the workout life with Pat. Like, Pat, he's not joking. Like, if Pat can sense that you're even remotely hungover, it's like shark blood.
And he's just going to get after it with you.
Oh, yeah. So, like, for a year, he just would watch. Like, he'd put the workout together. Mm-hmm. And, like, he'd see, like, Jess come in, quit. He'd see another buddy of mine come in for a while, quit. And then finally, like, we're coming into, like, the second year, and he goes, why don't you just come in earlier and we'll just work out together? And then it just, all right. Like, didn't even occur to me that we would work out with each other. And then that's just been it for the last 3 years.
And it's that CrossFit style workout kind of, or is it a totally different thing with him?
It's a variation, mm-hmm. I would say. Like, for me, when I started that, like, I was only like 145 pounds mm-hmm. with that first trainer.
Right.
Now, like, we have locked in at like 160, 161. Somewhere. Sure. So, like, I have to do like 3 to 4 days of strength training, like, mm-hmm. especially after the rodeo season's over. And then we do two days of cardio.
Sure. Yeah, and you find that the strength training's probably, I mean, just because of how short the ride is, cardio's probably not the most important aspect of the whole deal, right?
It's just as important as the strength.
You think so?
Yeah, because you got to be so explosive for 8 seconds.
Like, right.
You are firing from your feet to your head. Your feet got to move, and your head's taking whiplash. So you got to have the strength to hold yourself down, but you got to be, some people forget to breathe when they ride too. So if you don't have the cardio built up for 8 seconds, by like 6 seconds, you're already gassed.
Because it's not like just holding your breath for 8 seconds. It's a totally different yeah. thing on your body. And when you decided to kind of go that route, is it because you felt like you were going to get injured, or you just wanted to be that much better from everybody else?
I wasn't better than anybody else when I first made the NFR. Like, when I first made the NFR, I was like sitting fourth in the world. And, like, I found out right away that I wasn't ready for the NFR. It's just a different animal when you get there. And then that next year, like, I found success with what I was doing. But there should have been, like, there's more. And, like, I found, like, that next year when I switched over to working out with Pat. And, like, and I think it always reverts back to wrestling. Like, it's just a killer mentality. And I think bareback riding and wrestling go hand in hand, because it's you. It's only you out there. Like, you can't blame anything else on anybody else. You can't blame it on your horse. It's your job to be the very best with the animal that's underneath you. And, like, everything that happens from when you put on the rigging until you walk out of the arena is all in your control. You can make it the best ride in the world, or you can make it the worst ride in the world. It all depends on what you put in. So when I started, you know, getting back with Pat, and, like, we can get that kill or be killed mindset, you know, and then working out with my coach from college yet, like, all my technique stuff, like, the things just came into place to what I've developed my style as today.
And so, kind of piggybacking off that and going back to wrestling, I mean, were you the kid who started wrestling at 5, 6 years old and just went all the way through, you know, your senior year of high school? Or
I wrestled a little bit in, like, first, second grade, and, you know, I wasn't very good at it. And, like, you know, my mom took me to all the meets and stuff like that. My brother would go sometimes, and then he'd go rodeo with my dad. Like, they never really pushed me in wrestling. But when I started in seventh grade, like, when we had, like, school activity sports from seventh grade on, I never missed a practice from seventh grade to my senior year. And then from my freshman year to my senior year, I would put in 2-a-days every day. Like, I would wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go in for a 2-hour workout, go to class all day, and then I have a 3-hour workout after school.
So you were obsessed with wrestling.
Yeah. Being in, like, Iowa and being in wrestling, like,
well, it's Iowa, yeah.
I think I hate losing more than I like winning, and especially in, like, a combat style sport like that. So, like, my freshman year, I wasn't even very good then either. Like, my record ended up being 26-6. Or no, 26-20 was my record.
Barely 500.
Yeah, you know, and truthfully, I say I lucked out to make it to state that year. Like, I upset a kid. Like, I was guaranteed to go after I made that upset. And then I was a first day elimination at state, and that drove me insane. And then it became an obsession to be good at it.
And then you kind of went, and you went to state the 3 consecutive years?
No, I got beat out by the kid that I upset, beat me out the next year to go to state. And then after that, I qualified. And then I finally medaled my senior year. I was wrestling a really good kid in the semifinals. He was up by a lot. He had a call go his way, and he got some back points. And then he was very good on his feet too. Like, I couldn't stop his shot, but he was a Greco-Roman style wrestler. Like, he loved throwing people, and I was good at throws too, but I just didn't do them in the gym, or, like, I do them in our wrestling room, but I never threw kids. This kid double underhooked me, and I overed him, and I tossed him onto his back the last 45 seconds of the match. Ended up losing by a point.
Ugh.
Kid, Kinsett, he goes to the finals against the kid that I've pinned 3 times that year. it would have been pretty much a cinch for a state title.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's got to kill you. And that was your senior year.
That was my senior year.
And then you had mentioned to me before we kind of started recording the show is that you had a ton of D1 offers.
Yeah, I had 7 D1 offers. I had a bunch of, like, junior colleges and, like, D2, D3s. Like, I didn't have, like, just these stack of letters sitting at, but, like, I had some really good offers to go wrestle. There was a bunch of kids that were on my senior, like, my senior team. Like, there was 7 of us that were from on varsity from our freshman year to our senior year, and they took 5 of us to the NCAA tournament. And I watched in the court, like, the quarterfinals, these 2 kids, I was just watching this mat. And because nobody from Iowa was up, so I was just watching a different mat until the next round came in. And this kid took a really good shot. And I mean, like, should have been over. It was deep. It was clean. It was set up really well. The defending kid does the splits, and they just hit these counter move after counter move after counter move after counter move. The kid's, you know, I'm not even sure how he was doing it, but he was in the splits, and he was just circling, like, on his pelvis. Like, and this kid is deep around the shot, like, it should have been. Next thing I know, they're both on their feet, no points awarded. And I was like, I don't have that in my arsenal to make those counter moves over and over and over again. Like, I was really good at about 5 moves. That's all I did in a wrestling match was 5 different moves, and mm-hmm. it worked. But I didn't have 10 counter moves to one person's shot. Like, I'd have probably, truthfully, gave up the 2 points and went and started working a different offense off that. And I was like, there's no way. Like, I'd be either practice dummy is what I'd be.
When did you kind of decide that I want to ride bareback horses?
I was at the Three Hills Buckout my senior year of high school. And I was there to get my permit bought in the bull riding. And I'm not really sure. Like, I've talked this story a bunch, but, like, you know, I don't know what possessed me to get on a bareback horse that day. Like, there was really no reason for me to do it. I don't know why it sounded like a great idea. And then after I got on my first one there, I'm really not sure why I got on my second one. Because the first one I got on ended up being like an NFR eliminator.
Mm-hmm.
And she threw me over her head and stomped me underneath the gate, like, to get out of the arena. Like, just sat there and pawed me underneath this fence. And, like, the instructors, he's laughing at me. And he goes, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, run one more in. Like, if that happens again, like, this is over. Done with. Like, probably going to go work at the car dealership. Because like, rodeo is probably not my game. And I rode that one, and I was like, well, that could have been a fluke. Let's run another one in. So we ran another one, and that one worked off. And then it just kind of took off from there. I started doing the high school rodeos and the bareback riding. And then Iowa Central Community College was at my first high school rodeo that I rode barebacks in. And I kind of spurred this horse that came around, and it was nice, just came around on the left. And I, like, was kind of throwing feet at it. And the coach was like, how many barebacks have you been on? And I was like, that was my 5th. And he goes, oh, my God. He went over to the head coach, and they had an offer to me, like, that day.
And so those guys were like, hey, go through this step, and we think you're something? Or how'd that conversation go once, you know, they offered you
scholarship? They knew I was a bull rider. Like, that was kind of my deal all going through. And I was, like, a 50-50 bull rider. Not even a 50-50 bull rider. Like, if I got 2 out of 10 rode, I was doing good. I was more of a bull getter honor.
Added money is what they call that, I think.
Yeah, but at the high school rodeos, you don't get to win any money, so.
No, you pay to go to high school rodeos. You enjoy that halter and a $200 gift card to the Golden Corral.
Yeah, and I never rode horses, so, like, what was good was, their prizes were a saddle pad or a breast collar. Like, what am I going to do with this?
You're trying to get the saddle at the end of the year is what it is.
Why am I going to use this saddle for?
Right. No, exactly. For you, was it a similar kind of journey, or you're totally different?
Yeah, I started off riding bulls growing up, and then, I started getting on, like, bareback ponies and stuff when I was, like, 11 or something like that, and then started high school rodeoing. But I rode bareback horses and Bronx and bulls through high school and then went to college. So, and then when I got to college, I kind of gave up on everything else because I really wanted to focus on bareback riding. So
your bull riding was about as good as mine. I watched you at the college rodeo.
Dude, I hadn't been on one in, like, 3 years.
Yeah, it was about as good as mine. Like, I could get on a bull right now, and that'd be about as good as your bull riding was in college.
I added money, like I said. Somebody's got to do it.
So once you kind of went through the college rodeos, tell me kind of about, and I'm you have rehashed these stories over and over totally, but your 2014 was your first NFR.
Yeah, so just kind of starting it back in college. So Iowa Central took me. That was the only scholarship I had to go rodeo. Nobody else wanted me to come rodeo. Like, I had even called schools. Like, hey, I ride bareback horses and bulls. And they're like, So
cool story.
Yeah. Yeah. I got some kid down the road that can probably try that too. So, but like they were the only ones that wanted me to come there. And then I ended up making the college finals that first year and got bucked off my first horse to, I probably would have made it in the bottom end of the short round of the college finals. Didn't make it. But then the next year I ended up finishing eighth in the college nationals. And from there, like, it's kind of a weird, it's not a weird thing, it's really a good thing. Like, if you're a good bareback rider at Iowa Central, more than likely you're going to go and you're going to transfer to MoVal. That was kind of like the trend. Like, Tanner Oss went to Iowa Central. Mm-hmm. They transferred him down to MoVal. And then they brought me in to replace Tanner at Iowa Central. And then once Tanner finished at MoVal, I replaced him. Cole Pickton came through the ranks, did the same thing for me. And then there's another kid that's coming to MoVal this year, good bareback rider, but like they kind of just filter you in. And like the coach there, who is now the trap shooting coach at Iowa Central, he was a bareback rider. So like he took like raw talent, kind of molded it, and then they'd send you down to MoVal and they finish you out down there. So went to the college finals again in, this was 13, which was the first year I was at MoVal. And I think I finished like fourth or something like that. It was like Oren ended up winning it that year. And I was going to come back and finish. And I ended up getting hurt my rookie year, 2013. It was August. I was sitting like, I was bouncing in and out. One week I'd be 11th. The next week I'd be 16th. Like I was just bouncing to make my first finals, tear my collarbone off my sternum.
Mm-hmm.
Season's over. And like, really, like at that time I called Tandy Freeman. He's like, I don't have like an appropriate surgery to do. He goes, I'd have to crack your sternum, go in and fuse your collarbone underneath your chest. And he goes, I don't even know if that would hold that back in. He goes, it's the strongest joint in your body and you just dislocated it. Like you're probably going to have to learn how to live with your collarbone being dislocated. So I took 6 months off, which ruined the first half of that college rodeo year. So I ended up taking a red shirt. Apparently you can do that in college rodeo. If you don't go to enough rodeos, you can get your card back.
Mm.
So that's just kind of what we did. And I focused on pro rodeo in 2014, which led me to my first NFR. Like I could kind of describe my style back then as just being a straight gunslinger. My feet were fast. I could put good rides on, but like watching, thanks to the good old coronavirus, RFD has replayed the last like 6 years of the NFR. And I was so small and my style was so bad compared to what it was now. Like there was these nice little hoppers that were getting my upper body out of form. Like I just wasn't big enough and it showed in the bigger, stronger horse rounds. Like I got left a dent in the Thomas and Mack from power play, full baggage planted me. Delta ship broke my nose from driving my face into the ground so hard. Like
it was a rough year.
It was a mess.
Yeah.
You drew pretty deep that year too. I mean, you just named off three very powerful horses.
Yeah, like I drew as tough as you could. Like now they'd be dream draws. If I could have those horses at the NFR, I'd be like stoked. I'd be almost would say like that could be a pretty good chance you're going to have three round wins.
You
do your job right. But that year, man, it was rough. So going into 15, I'd made the finals. I took my college rodeo career, put them on that last card, finished, graduated, went to the college finals, finally won the college finals, and then surged back to the NFR later that year. That was a better year for me. Like I covered all 10 of my horses, placed in the average, ended up like fourth in the world, and I came in eighth. I had broke my hand at Calgary in a hang up and had to sit out a pretty good chunk of like the big part of our season to make it in. And after that, I got my new trainer, and we started doing things how we do it now. And I went on a tear of winning three world titles, three average titles. And then this last year, I finished third in the world after starting the 22nd of June.
So, I mean, you've kind of cemented yourself, and this is not something I've ever heard you say about yourself, but other people say it about you, as potentially the best bareback rider who's ever done it with a ton of career left. And it just seems like you just made a few adjustments and you – another thing people say about you that I'm sure you know is that you're like military, like you're so regimented, like you could be in the military or, oh, this is funny, she's going to get mad at me, but Ivy told me a story about you and she was like, I asked him what time it was and he's like, I want to be a world champion, you know, or what'd she say? She was like, yeah, I asked him what time it was and he's like, I just want to be the best. I just want to be the best. I was like, I still need to know what time it is. It's like, that's the kind of dedication it takes for anybody in any discipline, no matter what it is, to cement like that type of legacy. I mean, three world titles, three average titles, 3 years in a row. And then, I mean, for what you did in 2019, that might have been more impressive. You know, I don't know how you feel about that, but
I feel I've talked about that quite a bit with my wife. Like I talk with my wife more about like more openly about that than I do most other people. But like I was disappointed in the year. I wanted to make that statement that like I started in June 22nd and you guys can have the whole year and have all this other stuff count and have Houston count and have the American count and I'm going to come back and win. And I made a big surge to do it. It just wasn't in the cards, but I'm going to look back on that year sometime in my career. Like that was impressive. Like to get that done in that short amount of time and the way I had to do it and the way I finished it out and the way I had, like, it was honestly, before Clayton nodded his head in the 10th round, I broke the average record that Casey had set back in like 2011, like shattered his record. And then Clayton nodded his head and shattered my record.
Right. Just one of those things.
It was just, he had to have, you know, like to beat me in the average for my fourth straight average title, he had to have the most impressive NFR probably of anybody in the history of the NFR. You know, wins $200,000, has to win $400,000 to win the world. I mean,
right.
He had the most dominant year anyone's ever seen, and like you can't fault him for that. Like he was great.
Yeah.
He was lights out. Like that's totally what a champion's supposed to be, is lights out. And he was. So, but you know, I think like when it comes to winning a gold buckle, like you have to be like that. Like you're not just going to be able to be average and get by. Like you can't go to practice being average. You got to be that special talent, that guy that doesn't have a day off, that guy that mindset that he's got a killer instinct. Like, man, that guy showed back up here today. Like, great. We're going to fight for second today because that's the guy that can win on the junk nobody can.
Right.
You know, and that just kind of worked in my mindset. You know, like, I don't like taking days off. Like, I have this set out plan. And really, it kind of stems from, like, and Jess has seen me do this too, like, my goal sheets. And, like, our coach has us write these goal sheets out. And like you can put your top goal at the very top of your page, and like you stem it down like tree roots, right? Well, my thing on that is like it's pretty easy to write it. Like once you get kind of going on it, like you can write it. So at the end of a year, I'll take that goal sheet and if last year, like I didn't accomplish my goal. I wanted to win the world. I didn't accomplish it. So everything, I started going down through all the tree roots, right? And I like, you have to have an honest conversation with yourself. Did you do everything in your power? And if you can honestly say yes and check it off, and you can check off all the boxes that you wrote out for yourself, there's nothing to hang your head about because you did everything that you thought humanly possible. But if you're honest with yourself and you left a box open, that's your fault. That probably that could cost you a gold buckle, and that you got to live with that.
For somebody like you, just in this short conversation, I can tell you're the kind of guy who probably cannot live with that.
I don't live with it very well.
And so for you starting to travel with him, I mean, what's it like kind of having the pressure of having to go with that, you know, with the kind of mentality that he has, you know, every day being in a truck with him?
Oh, I mean, it was fun. Like I enjoy every second with him, you know. It keeps me and makes me a better bareback rider, and we both feed off each other. Sometimes like that deal's, I don't know, it gets awkward at times. Like last year, we left Nampa and I drove 3 hours and nobody said anything. And I was scared to reach down and turn the radio up. he'd gotten bucked off one of his onion ring of Corcos, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of a weird day, you know. It shouldn't have happened and it did. And we got in the truck and I was terrified. You know, I was a young kid, first time being in the rig with Tim, and I really was afraid that he was going to bite my hand if I reached over and turned the radio up, you know. So, but I mean, it's good for me. Like I've learned so much just from being around him, and it's made me a better person. It's made me a better rodeo athlete. It's just something I can kind of follow in behind and you know, use.
And that's what's how I personally feel, and kind of the reason we wanted to do this show is because it's not rodeo cowboy anymore. It is rodeo athlete. And when you approach it the way that you're approaching it, I mean, that's athletics, period, plain and simple. And if you have an off day in something like that, or if you have an off day on a bull, I mean, it could end a career. It could end somebody's whole plan.
Could end your life.
It could end your life. I mean, it has ended people's lives. You hit a barrel, well, might hurt, you know. And not that there's anything, because they put in the same road work and the same money, and it's a lot. But there's a lot at risk in the rough stock, you know, side of things that's just not necessarily in the timed events. And to approach it that way and kind of check every box, like you said, to make sure that you have your best shot, I mean, it's impressive to see that. And it probably has a lot to do with your personality and your background. And someone like you, Jay, is getting to go with him. I mean, all it's going to do probably is make you better, and then you guys might not be able to travel together anymore because it'll just be a competition. But
see, that's the thing, like what I like about Jess is like he puts the fire back in it, like, you know, like he likes to fight back, and that's why I like traveling with him, is because like we'll show up and that whole deal lets us put the situation in Nampa in the open, right. So Nampa, like I'd been on this horse before, I've been 90 on this horse like three different times, and I've got him in the long round of Nampa. Like this is like what I like built up in my head, is this is going to be the turning point to get me inside the top 15 and back in this world title race. And things just went haywire, and like just stuff that, and like, and it wasn't, like I said, it was all my fault that it went haywire. And I knew it from the second I did it that I screwed up. Like that's a horse you cannot make a mistake on, it because she felt me over there and then stuck me into my hand and then started turning away from me, tried to drill me. Like I got pretty close at hitting my face off the chutes, and then it was a wreck. But like I was so mad about blowing that chance. I wasn't mad that he won or, you know, people were doing good. I was so mad about losing that opportunity to make that ground up. And it's hard for me to let stuff go like that when I know like I made that mistake.
Right. Well, it's just a competitive edge to you, you know. Like that's what's awesome, is like you want to be the absolute best and you hold yourself accountable for it.
Yeah, no excuses. I mean, that's a big difference between not just rodeo athletes, but just any person. Generally, you find people will make an excuse for almost anything they can. And just to own that, I mean, it's just a next level thing, which you find in a lot of the top competitors in anything.
Yeah, and like with Jess, when I first met Jess, like Jess has got the stuff, but there's stuff in his game, and I think he can account to that too. Like just maturing in rodeo, being able to be competitive at that level. And I've told him this many a times, like, you know, you're going to have it harder, because every time you nod your head, you're going to be competing with a 3-time world champion in every single performance. You know, like it's easy for, you know, judges to get complacent. And if like you got Casey coming in one day, I come in the next, Clayton comes in the next, and here comes Jess in the fourth day. But when you stick all of us together, like he can get lost in the mix because he just hasn't had any accomplishments yet because he's so young in his career. So like he is forced to be at the top of his game every time he nods his head.
You know, there's an interesting thing because you brought up the judges and talking about doing everything in your power. Well, with the way judging works in bareback, sometimes that's taken away from you. I mean, what is kind of the feeling there, you know, as far as judging? And
I feel that, and I've had a mindset, I could be completely wrong on it, but like being able to be the world champion, when I took Casey winning his four, like, in a row, like I would just break his riding down. And like a judge would start him at like a 24-point spur ride. You know, like he set the standard for a spur ride. Like I feel like the world champion sets like what you want a spur ride to look like and in the minds of a judge. And if he would make mistakes, because he does make mistakes, and I make mistakes, and Jess makes mistakes, but like they would start taking him down. Like, man, maybe he made a 22-point spur ride. Even if he missed, you know, missed a lick. And the same for me, like, yeah, he kind of missed one. Let's make it like a 22.5. Where Jess, they're going to start him at like a 20, and he's got to ride lights out to get to a 22-point spur ride. Like, well, we're coming down. A lot of people are having to come up, and it's tough. I don't want to be a judge ever.
Yeah, that's like in any sport that has judging. I mean, you see, we were talking about how much you like UFC and mixed martial arts. And that's something I really like a lot too. And I mean, it's the same mentality in that sport that the judges, you know, that's just one of the hardest jobs. But
I think it's tough because there's a lot of judges, they've competed in rodeo, but they competed in different disciplines. And, like, the styles change so drastically. There's guys like Sage Kimsey that make stuff look so easy on rank bulls. And then there's the guy that, you know, Jess Lockwood that, you know, he can make these rides, then like he's going to get a few more points because it just stylistically, it just looks cooler. And if that's right, I don't know if that's right or if that's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I think Sage rides lights out and it's proven he's won 6 world titles in a row, but he makes things look so easy. Like, he doesn't do anything on the back of a bull. And you watch Jess Lockwood pretty much the same way, but he's just got something. He just does something.
There's a little extra flash to him. Like I wouldn't say flash, but he just makes it look just a tick harder than everything else, you know, than what Sage would is what I, from what I see, you know. He kind of gets over there and makes that Hail Mary move just a little bit more, and I think that's just kind of the difference.
And then the judge will, on the same bull, he's a little bit more sometimes because of it. You know, like that's a tough thing with a judge. It's hard to say what's right when you've never done the sport.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, and do you think, since you kind of brought up those two guys, I mean, do you think the judging style is a little different from PBR to you know, the PRCA?
I think it's evolved in the last year. Yeah. I actually had a conversation with George Gibbs earlier this year, and we were talking about the 90s in the bareback riding that are starting just to come out, and I feel like I can speak pretty freely on this because I just tied the world record this year. And, like, that was something I was like, man, you're letting guys be 90 over and over and over again. I was like, that used to be, like, if you were 90 once or twice in your career, like, you did something. Like, it was so tough to be 90 in the bareback ride. I was like, you're starting to throw these out. Like Oprah, like, oh, you get a 90, you get a 90, you get a 90. And he goes, well, have you seen the 90s? Like, the 94, like, and this is in January. He goes, have you watched the 94s? Because I was telling him, I was like, just don't give our world record away just because you guys get trapped in your scoring because you want people to be 90 for a fan's sake. And he goes, the bareback riders have evolved and the horses have evolved. He goes, our scoring needed to evolve. He goes, go back and watch them. Go back and watch the 90s. And you tell me that's not an 83-point bareback ride in today's age. And I started doing that after that. And he's not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, the horsepower has evolved so much. And like we were kind of talking about earlier, like being an athlete and being out here has evolved so much that it just kind of played into, like, they're going to have to evolve their scoring too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, the most exciting thing is the athlete aspect of it. I mean, it's just, you know, when you think cowboy, you don't necessarily think athlete. And the more you can think that, the better, because then it elevates the sport. And like the WCRA, that stuff is awesome. You know, just all about the athlete and just a different mentality. Even the Americans starting to really come out like that. And the way that a guy like you trains, and then what it does is it starts a momentum for everybody to do that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I would not consider myself a cowboy.
Right.
Unfortunately, I would love to, but like, I don't ride broke horses. Like, I just don't. I don't trust them. I don't feel comfortable on them. And I don't work cows. I don't really like cows that much, but I love riding bucking horses. And I know how to train myself to be a bareback rider. Where like Jess was catching wild cattle yesterday.
Yeah, I live right along I-35, and we had to rope. There's a buddy of mine that's got some Mexican fighting bulls, and he had them out. But I think it was just the way two different people were raised, you know? I grew up wanting to be a cowboy, not from a rodeo background, and then doing that, I got into rodeo. So, but like growing up as a kid, my biggest dream was just to be a cowboy, you know?
Right. So when you grew up, did you grow up like in town and like totally away from it?
No, I grew up, I mean, we live out in the middle of nowhere, honestly, sure. Kind of at the base of the Flint Hills, and dad and them run cows and everything, but all I wanted to do was do that. Right. I didn't care about anything else. And then growing up watching the PBR and stuff, I got my start on riding sheep and calves. And then we started youth rodeo, and it just kind of evolved from there. But I can remember just being a little kid that cowboy is what I wanted to be. I wasn't thinking that I wanted to be a rodeo athlete until I got to get on sheep, you know.
Did you play any sports in like high school or anything like that, or you were pretty fixated on rodeo?
Well, like I played sports in junior high and stuff, and then my freshman year, first high school rodeo, and I hadn't been on very many broncs, and then got bucked off. Long story short, I got kicked in the back and landed head first, and my mouthpiece shoved my gums off of my teeth. And so I went to the hospital, and they, like, pulled my gums down and put stitches in there to hold it down. And I was playing football, and it was, like, right before our first game, the weekend before. And according to the regulations, I couldn't play because I'd have to cut the front of my mouthpiece off. So after the game, we had one coach that was – he was the three-sport coach. I went to a little bitty school. We played eight-man football instead of 11-man. And he told me I needed to choose between rodeo or sports. And so I finished football because I wasn't going to quit, didn't play basketball. My dad was a really big track star in high school. And so I ran track and went to state in that. And then I didn't play football or basketball after that. Just because, like, I was going to focus on rodeo. If that's how it was going to be, then whatever, you know. I pissed a bunch of people off in my hometown, and I didn't care because I didn't play sports. Like, I lost a bunch of friends over it because you go to such a small school, and it was you lived, eat, and breathe sports. And I just wasn't about it, you know. I knew that I wanted to rodeo more than I wanted to play sports. I wasn't going to make a living playing football.
Right.
I mean, I weighed 140 pounds, and people could run right over the top of me, you know.
So yeah, I do know, actually.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody sitting at this table knows that, just based on our size.
Yeah.
But with kind of the backgrounds both of you guys have, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of great things out of you, just because you're getting started so young and you've got great mentorship. But, you know, one thing that we were talking about is you got to go to a UFC fight recently. And, I mean, I guess it didn't go as planned, to say the least.
No, not even close. Like, me and Sage had to do this deal for Las Vegas events, and it was super cool. Like, we got to, long story, like, after the fact, we got to basically run the strip for a day. Like, we went to Fairmont Street, did the slide or the fly over the street deal. We got to run the geysers at the Bellagio. We went to a high end, the top bar at the Delano. We got to do a bunch of stuff. I don't even remember all the stuff we got to do. It was like a full day from like 7 to 7 of just going and doing this cool stuff off the strip. But we were coming from the fourth run, and we only had like 3 days off. So they flew my wife out there. I was like, because I only got like a few days. I was like, I want to see my wife and my son. They're like, what if we fly your wife out to Vegas? I was like, yeah, that'll work. So they flew her out, and I was flying in from Rapid City. We had just finished Belle Fouche on the fourth run. We had like 3 days off before I had to get back out. And going to fly out, part breaks on the plane. They got to fly another piece or something. They flew the part from Denver up to Rapid, fixed the plane. That's delayed like 6 hours sitting in the airport. Fly to Denver and missed that flight. Sitting in lines, no one will help me. Finally, I just called them. I was like, they're like, we're just going to book you on another flight, like out of Southwest or something. So I went over and went to the Southwest terminal, and they flew me to Vegas, and I got there at like, which should have been like 11 o'clock in the morning. I got there at like 8 o'clock at night, and I flew in, and I was like, I don't have any of my bags. And they're like, what's in your bags? I was like, everything for tomorrow. Sponsor shirts, cowboy boots, belt buckle, everything. Like, I'm in sweats and a t-shirt. And he goes, oh, we need to get that bag. So we went over to the other terminal, found the bag. They took me over to the MGM, got my, and like my wife's sitting there at the, where they pull up at or whatever. We were supposed to be at this UFC fight 3 hours ago. Like, they gave us tickets to go, and I was stoked for it. And I'm sitting there and looking through my Instagram, and I see knockout after knockout after knockout. And it was the fight that Ben Askren got flying kneed by George Masvidal. It was a 5-second knockout. And I dropped the bags at the MGM, like, took it. I was like, just give me the ticket. We'll do the, and we sprinted to a cab. Got dropped off as close as we could get to T-Mobile, sprinted in there, and just made it in as John Jones is walking out. And thank God that fight went the full 25 minutes.
Yeah, get anything out of it.
Yeah, but it was cool. I mean, it was, I love that. Like, it was so different than, like, because I buy the pay-per-views all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, when they're fighting, like, they spotlight the Octagon, they sold out T-Mobile, but it got dead quiet. And you heard someone snap a leg kick off, and this place would erupt. Like, it was a cool setting.
Yeah, there's so many kind of like parallels between combat sports and rough stock. I mean, really, I guess kind of the only thing you could say that's tougher than rough stock might be cage fighting. I mean, maybe less risk. But I mean, as far as just going in there, it's got to be probably the only thing more nerve wracking getting on a bucking horse or a bull.
I would say, I mean, a roundabout way, you're locking yourself up there with a trained killer that weighs the exact same as you 24 hours in advance. Like, they both them guys know how to hurt each other in the highest form of every part, from boxing to jiu-jitsu to leg kicks. Like, they know how to hurt you in every aspect of hurting another human being at the highest level. So us strapping ourselves to a bareback horse can't be much of the same. And I finally realized this is a kind of a roundabout story off the fact, but this coronavirus has really messed with my adrenaline rush aspect. 2 weeks after we got home, we were out riding rangers around, and I was in this razor with the godmother of our child, and I rolled this thing rolled it pretty significantly. Like, it did like 12 grand in damage to it.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And everyone was okay, like not a scratch on either one of us. And yeah, all that was hurt was the razor. And so the next day, like, my wife calls her, and she's like, by the way, she's like 24 too. She's not some old lady. That's our
godmother like Mary Poppins.
That comes into your mind.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, how do you feel? And she goes, I am so sore. Like, through my whole, like, all my muscles are sore. And my wife looked at me, and she goes, how do you feel? And I was like, I'm fine. Like, it was like getting on a bucking horse. Like, you just had to kind of tuck your chin. and that coming out of my mouth, like, put in perspective, like, we're used to getting in car crashes.
Right.
You know, like, luckily, like, we were harnessed in, and, like, they had bought the extra safety stuff for that, luckily. And, like, we didn't move out of that thing, or else, like, it would have been bad. But, like, yeah, her whole body was sore from that. And, like, I was just fine.
I mean, we literally just get the crap yanked out of us all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, like,
pretty much it.
I would say, like, the comparison to that, like, them guys are so beat up after a fight. Like, I just watched the one last week, and, you know, they're breaking their orbital bones. They're all bloody. Like, we're tying off to a 1,500-pound animal jumping 2 feet in the air and kicking over their heads by our hand. To an extent, like, I feel like it is comparable in that aspect.
Yeah, I definitely think it is. And then seeing you kind of training the way you train, there's a lot of parallels with that type of training. And I could see why you'd be interested in that sport. But I've always been obsessed with it and always been obsessed with rodeo and both things. And it's just the more that and there's guys, right? There's like Donald Cowboy Cerrone. He is, like, by far my favorite fighter because it says cowboy. And he lives that life. I mean, he does the ranch thing. He does all that. But then he gets in there with some of the – I mean, he's fought everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as he's done, he's out there hanging out at his saloon at his BMF ranch and riding horses. And it's just like – I mean, that guy could have been he's a little big, but he could have been a rough stock guy. And it's a very similar mentality.
He rode bulls.
He did ride bulls. That's right. Yeah.
I don't think he was very good at it. I think he's, like, come and admitted that. So, Donald, if you hear this, like, I'm not making fun out of you. Don't come beat me up.
Yeah, for the love of God.
For the love of God. But, like, that cowboy hat he walks out in is like, his rodeo hat, from what I understand.
Is that what that is?
I think, like, that's what I've kind of read or heard him talk about, that old beat-up black cowboy hat. That's his rodeo hat.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. I mean, I've been watching him since he was in the WEC way back before he was even in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And he's just the coolest guy. He would be the best, like, ambassador for, like, the NFR or for, like, the PBR or something. He would.
Yeah. I feel like that guy could be successful at whatever he wants to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, his stories, like, are just from what I've heard about him, like, from the deep sea diving to the snowmobiling, to the fighting, to the mounted shooting. Like, he is not afraid to do anything.
It doesn't seem like it.
At the highest level, too. Like, he's a cool human being.
He's so cool. Yeah, I mean, I would love for that guy to come in here, but there's just not a lot of people in other areas that kind of represent that Western lifestyle and stuff, and it's cool to see a guy like that. And then it's kind of funny. You're almost like the opposite of him, right? Like, he's in a different thing, and then he's all about being the cowboy, and you're kind of like, I'm not a cowboy, but I do rodeo. It's a really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I live in town.
Yeah.
I enjoy grilling. Like, I don't care to ever own a cow in my life. And I think because, like, when I was trying to figure out how to pay my entry fees, like in high school and stuff like that, like I had to milk cows every morning mm-hmm. and every night and hated it. I hated being around them. I got kicked by them all the time, but it was just a way to get into the rodeo. Yeah, I don't care to ever own a cow in my entire life.
Or a horse, from what you said earlier. You just don't like riding horses?
I'm not good at it, number one. I think, like, I can ride a horse. Like, I can get on a horse and ride it around if it's a broke horse. But, like, if I have to signal them, like, off my feet or, you know, do anything, like, basically I need a bomb-proof horse is really what it is. Because I was so small growing up, and my brother's a world-class pickup man. My dad was, you know, a world-class pickup man. Like, they know how to ride horses very well and do a lot of things off horses. And so, like, when we were growing up, it would come time to, like, get on, like, break horses or something. Like, my dad, like, well, you're too small to get on that one. So you just have to sit here and watch. Well, I got sick of sitting there and watching. Like, I wanted to do other things. So I just never really learned how to do those things. Then by that time, like, I, like, had fallen into the wrestling world. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to do other things. And I never learned how to do those things. So, yeah, my riding of a broke horse is not good. So in that case, like, it sounds ridiculous, but I don't trust a broke horse. Because of probably getting on bucking horses. Like, I don't trust myself not to do a correct thing. Like, if I don't trust myself not to get in a horse's mouth and pull back and get him to freak out. Because, like, right. I don't know how to settle a broke horse down from throwing a fit. Like, I don't know how to ride a saddle good enough to that. Which is ridiculous. But
it sounds really funny when you say it. But, I mean, I get it. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those lifestyles that it's better because you'll be a lot more financially stable because of it. I'll tell you that.
I tried picking up. Like, I almost cost myself going to my first NFR because I was trying to be a pickup man in our college. And I bought a horse, and turns out he was a monster of a horse. And the tie down that they gave me for him was too small. And he pulled back and reared up and, like, pinned me on a gate. It stuck this steel post in my back. And I thought,
oh my God.
I thought it broke my collarbone. Like, the saddle horn hit me and I had road rash from my chest all the way down to my rib. I thought I broke my collarbone about a month before the NFR.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That was the end of it for me.
Yeah.
It was
like, this is the day that I never touch another horse. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you kind of touched on coronavirus, but, like, what have you guys been? I mean, you probably got to go, what, 10 rodeos maybe? Or
I don't even think we went to that, did we?
It's close. 10 or 11.
Yeah. I mean, right around there. The major winter rodeos.
And it got shut down in the middle of Houston. Yeah. So what have you guys been doing for 2 odd months?
Day thugging, ranching.
Yeah, not Tim. Tim's been chilling and grilling from what he just said.
He's been living the domesticated life. I was going to point in on that.
Yeah.
Tim, domesticated.
And love it.
Yeah.
So happy to do it.
I've been chilling with my boy. We've done a bunch of updates to our house, and then I got kicked out of my gym, so my trainer just sends me a workout. He went and took a bunch of weights and stuff out of the gym, brought them over to my
house.
Did
he really? Mm-hmm. Wow, I wish I had a friend like that. Yeah, and I just got to start going back to the gym 2 days ago. Lifetime opened up off 35. I was like, I'm going.
Yeah, so he snagged I snagged like 4 different sets of weights, some bands, some jump rope, and, like, he writes up workouts. So I do workouts in my driveway every day.
So you live in town. You guys are from the same area, though.
Yeah, I go to college in
Marshall.
You're
still in school.
Yeah. So,
I live in that college town. Like, yeah. Everything was so accessible, and, like, where that's at, like, it's in the dead center of the United States. So, like, rodeo was pretty easy. Like, it was only a 9-hour drive to get down here.
Right.
Pretty easy for a seasoned rodeo cowboy. We were talking, like, God, we can't wait to get out of this truck in, like, the last 50 miles.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we were driving last night, and he picked me up because I live in Kansas, so I was, like, on the way here, just 2 hours away from Marshall. And we got, like, 3 hours down the road, and he looks at me and says, are we there yet? No, I'm sorry, bud. Not quite.
Started playing with the locks.
Yeah. I mean, acting like a brat. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Acting like a world champion diva?
I'm traveling with a kid. That's what I thought.
Yeah, so you don't rodeo for 2 months, and all of a sudden you get antsy being in the truck, like you'd spend 200 days a year?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's only so many things you can do. We've learned how to watch TV and drive pretty well.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's frowned upon. But I mean, there's only so many times you can listen to one song.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah.
Harry Styles, Adore You, I think we have that one down.
Yeah, we can duet to that pretty well.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You guys have a video? I'll see that after.
Maybe. We might be able to work something up.
Hey, I'm just looking for entertainment too. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird getting back in the, like, cause like I've sporadically just drove the truck like 30 miles down the road to Menards just because I wanted to get in my truck and drive it. And then being in it for 9 hours, I'm like, God, this sucks.
Yeah. It's like, maybe I don't. You get so stuck in the cutting the grass and firing up the grill. Maybe you don't want a rodeo anymore.
Yes.
He does literally bring firing up the grill to an extent as he caught his Traeger on fire. So
yeah, I did.
You caught it on fire?
Caught it on fire. And yeah. So the first time I ever cooked a pork butt was during the whole shutdown here. And like, it literally caught the whole grill on fire. Like, don't really know how, truthfully. Like, the drip pan was clean. Like, it wasn't pouring, like, grease down into the fire. And, like, the fire on those things are covered twice. Like,
they're covered twice. Dude, I'm obsessed with Traeger. This is going to be, what, Ty, the third time we've referenced Traeger? They're going to have to sponsor the show at this point. Like, it's a given.
Oh, yeah. They didn't like my my Instagram post when I started bashing their grill for catching on fire.
Okay, so you're taking it the wrong way.
Yeah, I went straight pit boss after that, Traeger. So I'm not even upset about it. I bought a 1,000 square inch pit boss for half the price, and it cooked way better than your Traegers.
Oh my God. Okay, so cut all of that, Ty. I want them to sponsor the show, not all right, sue us.
Working on that.
Just kidding. So you had just started doing it, and then you switched.
Yeah, well, like, I've had that Traeger for a while, but, like, that was the first time I've ever really cooked, like,
doing the all-day thing.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was a 9-hour cook, and I've never done it on the Traeger. I've always seen people do it on, like, a charcoal grill, but I wanted to try it on the Traeger, and it was working good, and then, like, I had to take it off to wrap it. Like, it was at the point where you needed to wrap it up and finish it, and I brought it back up, and I wrapped it in butcher paper, and sat it on there, and I had my thermometer on there, and I went back downstairs, and I'm... like, it had, started dropping in temperature. Like, the internal channel, I was like, that's not right. Like, hopper's full. Go back up there, and it had shut itself off. So, turn it back on, put it back on smoke, started it back up, and I just sat there and watched it. And I'm like, you know how they creep? They just creep up to their temperature, right?
Yeah, slowly.
And I was like, no, those do not heat up that fast. Like... And the next thing you know, I opened it up. And like, my son is napping. And my wife yells at me every day that I'm way too loud. I wake my son up. I'm going to murder you. Like, the whole nine yards.
It's a typical marriage relationship.
Yeah, straight up. Yep. Like, next house, I told her 12-inch concrete walls. That's what we're going to live in. Like, I don't even care.
You're going to live in a bunker?
Yeah, you brought this on yourself. Like, you're getting no cell phone service, but our kid will never hear us in this house. I'm like, I opened the door. I said, get my gloves now. And she's on the phone with somebody. And she's like, what? And I was like, the grill's on fire. Get my, like, I need my, like, insulated gloves so I can pat this thing up. Like, it has lit the pork butt on fire. And, like, I got it pulled out of the grill. And, like, she didn't comprehend, bring my gloves. She comprehended, hey, bring a pail of water. And she went, what? Just dumps a half a bowl of water on my pork butt that's 5 hours deep into this cook, and I'm going to feed 8 people with it. I'm like, oh, my God, I just ruined this thing. So finished it in the oven. It turned out. But, yeah, I hit Traeger up on the old Instagram. And funny enough, they responded.
Did they?
Yeah. I was like, thanks a lot, Traeger. You lit my whole thing on fire today. And I, like, turned it off and, like, restarted it, lit itself on, like, let it cool down, turn it back on, lit itself back on fire again. They liked my post.
They must have thought it was, like, an ironic, funny thing.
Yeah, and I messaged them, and I was like, you think it's funny that your grill caught on fire and tried to catch my house on fire? And they messaged back, sorry, didn't mean to do that. We sent your message over to technical support. Someone should be contacting you soon. Ghosted me.
So, would you just sitting at your house like a lawn ornament now?
Pretty much. I told my trainer he could have it if he wanted, but fire it up at your own risk.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. If you want this absolutely faulty thing, go ahead and put your whole family at risk.
Yeah.
Yours truly, Tim O'Connell.
Yeah, pretty
much. Thanks for the workouts.
Yeah, it comes.
See you at your funeral.
It comes with a cover. Like,
Yeah, it comes with a cover. Yeah.
I mean, it's a free trigger. You can't turn it down.
No. Well, that's not a trigger.
Turns out a lot of people have caught their triggers on fire. It's not an uncommon thing.
Really?
After learning this.
See, because I'm the opposite. I let mine's filthy. And I use it every other day.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. But I've now, in this quarantine, I've bought four grills. I have four grills in my backyard. I'm that guy now.
Domesticated.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you ever get on another bucking horse, I'll be surprised.
Yeah. My wife was telling me after this, like, you know, everyone, you know, this drives me insane. When people, like, you're at, like, what I would call, like, in the peak of my career, and the people ask, what are you going to do when you retire? What do you mean? What are you going to do when you retire? Like, what are you going to do when you retire? Well, I'm not retiring for like 20 years, but like you can't do this forever. And I was like, are you jealous that I'm doing what I dreamed of doing since I was knee high, that I'm part of that 0.01% that is actually doing what they've dreamed of doing and being the best at the world at what they're doing? Like,
well, absolutely. They're jealous.
Yeah. So you want me to quit and do something else because you want me to do a miserable job too. And like, long story short, get that ran over with. That's a question you get a lot.
Great. You get that question with anything. It doesn't matter if you start your own business or you rodeo any sport, you can start a freaking podcast. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. people are asking you that question. Like, people get so upset when they see somebody, or it's even worse if they know somebody
mm-hmm.
who goes and excels and they leave it all out there because they were too scared or too lazy or whatever the reason is to do that. And that's going to probably trigger a lot of people. But that's just the reality, and that's just one of those things, like, you immediately know you don't associate yourself with that person or people's, you know, and the bigger you are, the more of them there are.
Yeah. So, like, my response has lately been, like, I don't plan on retiring anytime soon. Like, I'm literally doing what I love to do, and I do want to set a future up. Like, I want to walk away from the sport on my own terms, not because I stayed around too long. But, like, I'm not looking to start something else right now either. But my wife did say that you should start a food truck business, like a higher end food truck business, like a
barbecue.
Because and she's like, we kind of like were joking about it last night. She goes, that would like, cause I do enjoy grilling quite a bit. So like, I would, you're like, she'd like make enough food to like, when it's gone for the day. Like have like cook so many prime ribs one day, cook so much meat this, like, and when it's gone, it's gone. So like, you never have just throwaway. And, like, you're just not going to keep making, like, and she goes, have somebody else run it while you cook all day and then give it to them.
Well, I can tell you it is not a bad business plan because around here in Fort Worth, these food trucks are parking everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife has decided, like, she likes to go to these food trucks. And there's this famous one. It's a lobster something. I don't know. They were on a Shark Tank. And they came to our area, which is just, we live in a town called Keller. It's just east of Decatur. And they park there. And they do that. Yeah, they were sold out in like 5 minutes. I was like, I don't know. They charge like $30 for like this family meal of like those lobster sandwiches you mm-hmm. can get in like the East Coast. And they were done in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to sit there and sell food to people, but I'd make it.
You would cook and then she could sell it.
Yeah, I would cook. And
well,
then
Shane Hanchy, he's got
the crawfish thing. I think he's killing in that too. We had to get crawfish. As soon as we got south enough today, we pulled off and got some crawfish.
It was amazing.
They had such a good deal. They're like, basically, if you get 6 pounds, our price is like you get 1 pound for free. So we ate 12 pounds of crawfish before we got here. And no crawfish left behind either.
Yeah, okay. So remember when I said you could use the bathroom? I changed my mind. No, sir. But, yeah, I do. That's a great idea. You should do that.
Yeah, that's about the only thing I got thinking about going for me after life after rodeo.
Yeah. I'm still probably gonna pay him to enter me and stuff, so he'll have that as a side gig.
Oh, so you've been entering him?
Oh yeah, I cooked the books on that deal.
Yeah,
yeah. He just doesn't know it yet, but he's got him a side gig lined out for when he does quit.
So I get. What's the percentages of like if somebody rides like your horse at a rodeo and you win on somebody else's horse?
It's usually 10 to 15%. Yeah, 15% is kind of the standard for like a.
Yeah, we'll go 25.
Ooh, that's steep, dog.
I mean, gotta do what you gotta do.
I thought we were pals.
I mean, business is business. I've tried to teach you to separate friendship from business.
We'll talk about this at a later date.
Well, it sounds like the better you start doing, the more you guys are going to have to separate that, because you might just have a lot of quiet car rides with Tim.
Don't you touch that radio.
And don't you freaking talk to me either.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you know, guys, it was a lot of fun having you here. And as soon as rodeo starts going, I mean, I wish you guys nothing but the best. You know, we wish you nothing but the best at the Gauge. And our goal is to just elevate the sport of rodeo as much as we can. Bring as much exposure to the athletes as we possibly can. And I just appreciate you guys taking the time and being exhausted and actually coming down here. And Jess, you getting to travel with Tim, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of great things out of you. It was really good that you got to come and be on with Tim. And Tim, you're a rock star. Keep it up.
Thanks. Yeah, we're going to get to rodeo tomorrow, truthfully. We're going to have the first ever standalone bareback riding.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And the Riggin Rally is what we've dubbed it.
Yeah. How many entries?
17.
Yep.
It's a mixture of probably the top 20 in the world that could make it work, and it's going to be cool. I mean,
it's not just cool, it's super cool.
Yeah.
It's not just cool, it's super, super cool.
Yeah, it's super.
It's super-de-duperty.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, where's that? That's in Weatherford, right?
Yep. So from what I've seen and what we gathered on it, like it's going to be a cool event. Cowboy Channel is going to cover it, so hopefully this won't be the, you know, this will be the inaugural event of something that we could start up.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that needs to happen to keep it growing. Yeah. So.
Well, unfortunately, it's probably going to be our best rodeo of the year. I think it's kicking off, but
yeah.
Got to do.
Yeah, I mean, knock on wood, they might do Cheyenne. So
I hope.
Yeah.
I really just hope they have an NFR.
I mean, at this point, it's just whoever has like 20 grand, one can come. I don't know. What's it going to be? You know, it's.
Yeah, I don't know.
Unless you're Shad Mayfield, but.
Yeah, oh my God.
Dude, that was crazy.
What a monster.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, when he won that, he was just such a cool cat at the American. It was just like another day at the office. It was unbelievable.
You just knew, like, it was in the air. Like, you just weren't going to beat him. Like, you weren't going to beat him. And, God, I'm going to blank on his name. Who was the Bronc rider that won?
Oh my gosh! Now you've got
he's such a nice guy. He's so quiet too.
He went to school at Clarendon.
Wyatt Casper.
Oh my! Yeah, like you knew, like Wyatt and Shad were gonna win that day. Like it was just,
they were both just on fire.
They were unstoppable, and like it was just in the air. The storyline was right. The mix was right. Like there was just no stopping either one of them that day.
No. Yeah. I mean,
I love that rodeo.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah, and you know what's funny is, I thought. I got it. I shouldn't say this, but I thought you won. I thought you won it.
We were jokingly about that. So I was staying up at Lambert's house, Cody Lambert at that time, and we got back that night, and he said, I have never in my life seen someone so mad to be 90 and a half points to win third.
I thought you had the best ride, personally. I go on record saying that. Just watching it. What did you think, Jess?
Jess pulled my Riggin that day, too.
I was a professional Riggin puller that day. I thought it was a really good bareback riding. I mean, I'm not a judge.
Yeah.
We had that conversation. I don't want to judge.
I've watched it back. I will go on record saying Casey should have won it.
Yeah. Really?
I mean.
Horse bucked harder. Not really that. Like, my ride was so. Would you call it out of control?
Out of control, but in control. And that horse had like an off day. Like, you know, like
my horse turned back. There was a horse I broke the world or tied the world record on like 3 weeks earlier. And she decided to make a tight circle that day. And like, I was going at her, but she is so hard for a small horse. Like, she won't buck you off, but like, she's hard to make a really pretty spur ride on. And it was just a battle, is really what it turned out to be. We're like, Casey owned Virgil. Like, after watching it back, too, like, he had a great day. Casey had a better day. And me and this little horse went at it. And, like, I think we were both evenly matched. But Virgil being about 300 pounds heavier, it just kind of takes the cake. When he has his day, it's over.
Yeah, see, that's the difference when you guys know what you're looking at. I'm just like, when I'm looking at bareback, I just look for what looks the smoothest. Kind of like you talking about Sage Kimsey, that was just a viewer's perspective. But, yeah, it makes sense when you say it like that. But regardless, guys, we cannot wait to see you guys get back to rodeoing, and hopefully neither of you kill each other in the truck on the way home.
Fair enough.
This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Casey Burke. Our theme song is by Shay Ashire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next time.